It's time now to go beyond the headlines. And for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
We've done it. We've made it through the summer. I mean, it's still technically summer, I think. But we've made it. It's football season, baby. The NFL season kicks off today. I need to turn the applause on. We got air horns. We got a ding.
You will not be slept on no more.
No, you
brother.
Sure won't. We've That's got right. Chiefs, Ravens tonight, the defending Super Bowl champs, hosting the Baltimore Ravens in a rematch of the AFC Championship game. We will dive into that. Matt Burrows, friend of the program, said a interesting thing on our sister station, 95.7 The Game yesterday, that I would love to dive into, so we're going to do that. We've got some statistical projections for the NFL season. The Giants paid Matt Chapman. The A's had a player that they DFA'd, but they definitely made up this player.
They did.
Player is not a real person. We'll get into that. But more important than anything I just said, a shout out to you, James. A shout out to me, Kyle, and a shout out to our sponsor, Jiffy Lube, as well as everybody here at Odyssey Sacramento. We have made it 1 year. 1 year ago today, the Insiders debuted. I believe D'Lo and Casey took an extra day off, and we did a four-hour show.
Oh, we did do 4 hours.
I feel like that's a thing that happened.
I think it happened at least once. I just don't know if it was the first day.
Yeah, I think it was the first day, and then we jumped it. If memory serves, but yeah, 1 year. 1 year we've been doing this program. It's crazy.
It's amazing,
time
Kyle.
Hauls ass, man.
I'm having a good time.
I hope so.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but like this year has gone by like super quick.
Yep.
Like, you know, we're still like I feel like every day it's fresh, it's new. Like I definitely enjoy working with you, Kyle.
Same. This is the coolest freaking job. I told my wife this the other night. Because the commute gets to me, I love doing the show, and then I get to do the post show stuff, and I chat with Jesse for a while, but then it's like, man, I gotta write, and I gotta I gotta podcast, and I get outside of myself a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But if I told, and would I like this show to be 3 hours, and would I like to have a producer? 100%. And you know, we've made that. Anybody with ears in this building wear that. But despite all of that, where I'm going to complain about the stupid things that come along with getting to do this for a living.
Yeah.
If I told me at 12 years old, that this is what I would be doing on September 5th, 2024,
mm-hmm.
I would have lost my mind. It would have been like, oh my God, let's go. Get me there now.
It's crazy. If you would have told me even like 5 years ago that I would be in radio doing a show full time, I would have been like, oh, okay.
That's weird.
That took a turn. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess the media world is so different, and you have to evolve and change and be someone different all the time. You can't lose who you are and your core tenets,
mm-hmm.
but you have to be malleable. You have to be willing to say yes and willing to work for pennies on the dollar and you know, risk and put yourself out there. But in the end, I'm having a good time. You're having a good time. I hope our listeners are having a good time. And, you know, it's been a good year.
And thanks to everybody who's rocked with us. That's part of what made this show, or what makes this show so fun,
mm-hmm.
is the community that D'Lo and KC established. And I will talk about this any chance I get, because A, I think it's super impressive what they did, but B, it's even more impressive the continued support that everybody gives them and just immediately gave us.
Yeah.
We stepped in day one and the viewership numbers were good, because that's one of the daunting things. It used to be, before YouTube, you just got on air and you wouldn't know if anybody was listening until the ratings books came out.
Mm-hmm.
And now you can see that there are people there, and we have the chatty house, and people are chiming in. We have people who call the show, and it's such a cool, meaningful thing that every single day we get to jump in here and hang out with all of you guys, whether you're in the Chatty House, whether you're listening on the radio, whether you're watching on YouTube and Twitch and not participating in the Chatty House, you're on the Odyssey app. Maybe you listen to this show via the podcast because you can't listen live. It's really, really cool that you guys take time out of your days to do that, and we appreciate the heck out of it. And hopefully this isn't the only anniversary this show has.
Yeah. Well,
fingers crossed.
I don't expect. I expect us to be here a long time, Kyle.
Yeah, same. Yeah. That's the hope for sure.
Yeah.
So, salute to all you guys. Salute to you, James. Shout out to Charlie, D'Lo, Casey, Aaron, Stacy, everybody who helped make this show possible. Jiffy Lube, of course.
Yes.
Big shout out to Jiffy Lube. We love them very much. JiffyLube.com to find the location nearest you today. All right. So we've been doing this for a year. Now what?
What I like is it, Kyle, we can do this.
Now what do we do?
Every day, and then we stumble upon weird things, and we just like, okay, I want to know about that. And so we talk about weird things that aren't always sports related, but Katie Weaver in the New York Times, she took a deep dive into the penny. This is one of the most fascinating pieces I've seen written, and the title is America Must Free Itself from the Tyranny of the Penny. So the penny, right? The penny, the little tiny copper penny. Did you know that, first of all, it costs 3 cents to make a penny?
Yes, yes. I did know that it costs more to make a penny than the penny is worth.
Okay, so, and not only that, but people constantly don't use pennies anymore. So there are actually 240 billion pennies lying around in the United States. There's enough pennies in the United States for every man, woman, and child to have $7.24 in pennies, which is 724 pennies. Pennies are like a plague on our society.
That's insane, dude.
There's no way to get rid of them. $100 worth of pennies weighs 55 pounds. So just imagine how much weight just in pennies we have floating around. And to get rid of the penny literally takes like an act of Congress. To change anything on the penny takes an act of Congress. So there's nothing you can do about this because you would need bipartisan support, and that ain't ever going to happen.
So what I understand is, I believe in England, they don't have a 1 cent piece.
Okay.
Everything just rounds.
I would
be so fine if I'm paying $4.65 for something. That just happens to be what my coffee costs. If I'm paying $4.65 for something and I have to, or I'm sorry, let me say $4.64.
Yep.
And I'm going to pay cash. And they went, hey, it's going to be $4.65 because we don't take pennies. I'd be like, great. That's actually really helpful.
This is like the entire premise.
I don't want pennies back either.
Yeah, this is the entire premise of the movie Office Space. They just round up and steal your penny. That's like, eventually it would add up. I mean, if there's 240 billion pennies in the world.
But there's also rounding down.
Yeah, oh no, that's true.
So if it costs 482, okay, now it's 480. But if something's 483, yeah, hey, there go the couple pennies.
What if we just went full dollar store and everything was just an exact, like with tax, was just rounded to a dollar, like $5, $8, $125.
I'm sure that there are people who are adamantly against this because, you know, if 10 cents here, 10 cents there,
yeah,
and you start to, but if that's how it was and I just knew the flat dollar amount of everything, I would be so much happier. I'd be so okay with that.
I wonder if you could go like door to door and just say, do you have any old pennies you want to get rid of? And just like, I'll take whatever pennies you have. And I bet you people would just give them to you. I bet you in your garage could end up with like 50 gallon garbage cans filled with pennies.
You want to put on an APB for pennies?
Yeah, just like I am the guy who would like to collect pennies.
Send us your pennies.
Send us all your pennies. We will take all your pennies. That's a new thing. We will take all your pennies here at the Insiders. If anyone wants to bring pennies in, we will take all your pennies, and then we will collect them, and we will give we'll bring them to the bank where they will have to put them in the rolls, not us.
Hell yeah.
And then we will
I love this.
Get rid of all the pennies and donate all the money to a local either homeless shelter or food bank.
Perfect.
How about that?
Bring us your pennies.
We will try to
JC,
eliminate
Hardaway.
Every single one of loafers. The pennies. Yes. Now, I do not want a bunch of penny loafers here. That would be tragic. So we will. How about we do that? We will collect all your pennies,
and
that will be our contribution to society here on the Insiders.
So be our contribution to society, because Lord knows we're not doing anything else.
Do not sneak any dimes.
I had if you give us a dime, I will track you down and throw it at you.
Yeah, throw it at you.
Pennies only.
Pennies only.
My lid to my new coffee mug that you got me is very convenient, because I can just set my tea bag on top of their paws. And that's nice, because yesterday I put it on a paper towel and it did not go well.
Okay.
I had to do some maintenance. So being able to just drop that on the lid is great. One time in high school, I had an English teacher who, and we'll get to 49ers, we'll get to NFL season, all that's coming up.
Will we?
But yes. I had this high school teacher, history teacher, and I think it was my freshman year, maybe freshman, sophomore year, whenever it was, doesn't matter. Anyways, she's like got this little pep in her step, and she's probably in her 50s.
Okay.
She got this pep in her step one day, and she's like bouncing around the classroom, and we're like, what's up? Like, what? This is weird. She's like, I found a penny on the ground today. We're like, oh, a lucky penny. And then somebody in our class goes, it's just a penny. Like, why are you excited? Like, you won the lottery, you found a penny. And she goes, if I find a penny on the ground every day for a year, do you know how much money I would have?
$3.
And again, yeah, we're a bunch of 15-year-olds. We're like, $3.65? Like, what?
She's
not a lot, actually.
She's an English teacher, not a math teacher.
Well, if I find a penny on the ground every day for a year. Like,
as someone with a bad back, it's got to be like a 5 spot. If there's a dollar on the ground, I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to risk it.
That's so bougie.
If I lean
you've managed to out bougie yourself. That's crazy.
If I see a dollar and I'm like, if I lean over and throw out my back picking up that dollar, I'm going to be very upset with myself. Now, a 5 spot, maybe I'd pick it up, but... Yeah.
Dog.
I'm not picking
up
a quarter.
No, you don't get to. No.
I'm not.
No, look. If your line, for I'm willing to throw out my back is separated by $4, no chance, dude.
But if I find a $5 bill every day, Kyle, how much would I have?
That's a good point. That's a really good point. NFL season kicks off tonight. Chiefs. Ravens in Kansas City. We will dive into that. I went to the A's game last night.
Mm.
I'm going to 2 more. I will be going to 1 on September 24th. That's the Tuesday of the final home series. And then I'm going to go to the last game. I might be off that day. Uh-oh. So we got to figure that out. But I'm going to the last game at the Coliseum. And it was weird. Because they lost 16-3. They got mollywopped. But there was never a bad vibe. It's almost like a... I don't know how to describe it because it's eerie. They've taken all the signage down. You know when you walk across the BART ramp and they had the Raiders banner and the A's banner and then they just had the A's banners and it was like the World Series and the Rookies of the Year, MVPs or whatever they were. Those are gone when you walk. So now when you walk across the BART bridge, it's just stadium. There's no signage. And when you get into the stadium, everything is closed. All the like kids areas are closed. A bunch of the like booths, like food and vendors is what I was looking for. Like food and merchandise vendors in the concourse are closed and like off to the side. The team stores are all half full because they're not going to restock anything.
No.
It's just it is a weird vibe in there.
Mm.
And then everybody there is, so many people are like, yeah, this is our last game. I've been coming here since I was 8 years old and I'm here with my family who's in from out of town. That's what I went with my buddy Evan from 95.7. He brought his parents and who live down in San Diego. And a shout out to the Giddings family, by the way. They were a delight. And they went as a family because, yeah, hey, it's just their last time at the Coliseum, last time at an A's game together. And it was just a, even as they were giving up 7 runs in the, I think it was the 6th inning, then they give up 4 the next inning.
Getting pummeled.
Yeah, it was just, but everybody's out there, you know, doing the Tristan Gray jokes and the Jansen Junk as a person. You know, just we're furiously Googling who some of these players are.
Oh yeah.
And just having a great time. And a big salute to Mariners fans in the building who were all very, very chill. Understood kind of the assignment, understood what was going on. It was, I expected it to be almost funeral-ish in terms of the vibe, and it just wasn't. It was a really good time.
I'm intrigued. I don't think I will see one more game. I did go to the reverse boycott game, and I kind of said that's going to be my last game. Like,
that was a good game.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun.
For me to go to a game, it takes hours, right? Like, I have to carve out an entire day. It's not an easy thing just because I live so far away. But I would definitely consider going to one more game. Especially, I would take my oldest for sure. My wife would probably go too. But, you know, my oldest and I have been to quite a few games and we're A's fans. So I just don't know that I kind of worry that I would go and it would be like almost hollow. Like it, you wouldn't get what you're looking for out of it.
What would you be looking for?
Some sort of closure, I would assume, as like someone who's walking into the building for the last time. I don't know, like as someone who walked into Arco Arena for the last time, like you felt a certain way, like, okay, I spent a lot of time here, not only working, but going to games and, you know, all of the games that I've been to, I don't know.
But that vibe is so different knowing that like,
They're moving on to a better space. Yeah.
Right. If they had gone to Seattle or Anaheim or Virginia Beach. If they had gone to one of that leaving that arena the last time would have been the vibe would have been a lot different. Like there's nostalgia and it's like a bummer, but also hey, moving on to better things.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
For people who live in the Bay Area who are going to it's like this is it. This thing is gone now. And if you've decided, here's the thing for you. If you had decided the reverse boycott game was your last game, like you took that in then.
I did.
Now you'd be going back as like a just to do it.
Yeah, because I think that the reverse boycott game, because there are so many people there, and it was a fun game to go to.
It was a freaking blast.
Yeah, I felt like you got the feels, like being there, like how sad this is that this isn't going to happen again. I just don't know that going and sitting there with 2,000 or 3,000 fans at this point would have that same energy, that same feeling. And you're right, like all the things that are missing. You know, it's like it's almost like if you walked in and they put in a urinal, you'd be like, oh, well, this doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
As opposed to just peeing in a trough, which is what you have to do at the Coliseum.
I saw when I was in the bathroom last night, washing my hands.
Yep.
This dad and his kid walk in. And apparently, kid's first time at the Coliseum, first time in a trough. Because dad was like, I hear his dad go, yep, just pick a spot. I was like, wow, I'm glad that these two got to experience that. That's great. It's a coming of age tale. Going to the bathroom at the Coliseum for the first time.
I mean, I have a lot of memories at the Coliseum. You know, yeah, I've been to so many games, like first baseball game ever, but I mean, I saw Pink Floyd at the Oakland Coliseum.
That's like, so sick.
Just not to have it there as like a functioning, you know, like facility is going to be really weird. I mean, I'm sure they're playing soccer there. Yeah.
So, I'm interested to kind of see what becomes of it.
It won't be there that long. They're going to develop that entire area.
I would imagine so.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was definitely a little odd, but I had a good time and look forward to going to a couple more with the fam. So, nice. We'll cross that bridge when we get to it because we've got NFL football tonight, 5:20 kickoff, the Baltimore Ravens visiting the Kansas City Chiefs. I can't decide if I like that this is the week one game or the first game. Because I understand wanting to put a premier matchup. It is Thursday night football. It is celebration of the previous year's Super Bowl champs in their home stadium. You want to have that good matchup. All eyes going to be on the NFL tonight. Everybody knows it's Thursday night kickoff, week one. Can't wait. Everybody's gearing up for Sunday or Monday. Oh, man, we're so excited for football season. So you want to make sure the matchup carries heft, right?
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, with the way the NFL goes now and the way teams prepare for the season, the first 3, 4, sometimes 5 weeks are almost de facto preseason games while teams get into a groove. I don't want to say get in shape because that's what they're doing in camp, but get into a game groove mm-hmm. and really hit their stride in a season. And that's where the AFC Championship game rematch, Ravens-Chiefs, that's when I would love to see in week like 9.
Yeah, even if it's mid-season, yeah, like, you know, week 6, week 7, mm-hmm. yeah, I wish they would have saved this one.
Me too.
Because they're not division rivals, so they don't play each other again. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? So if it's a team you're going to play twice, that would be one thing. But this is one of the marquee games of the year. You know, your two MVP candidates, two mm-hmm. of, you know, maybe 5 MVP candidates. And I would have liked to have seen a little bit later because the football can be really, really sloppy early in the season.
Yeah.
Do we even know where is this playing on? Like
what? NBC.
It's on NBC?
Yeah. And Peacock, okay. I believe. So I'm looking at the Chiefs schedule. So they get Chiefs-Texans is week 16 in Kansas City.
Okay.
Like if the Texans are good, that could be a really, really fun that game. It's late in the yeah. year. Like that could be a blast, right? So there's not a ton of you start looking at the Chiefs' home schedule this year. You know, Buccaneers, Chiefs-Bucks is not.
Nope.
Like you had Chiefs-Lions last year, but the Lions were that team that, remember in 22, they beat the Packers to eliminate the Packers from the postseason. It was like, wow, I think they won 6 in a row to end the year.
Mm-hmm.
Or they start 1-6, I think, or something like that. And they ripped off a bunch of wins. They knocked the Packers out of the playoffs. And it was like, all right, here come the Lions. I think the Buccaneers are just kind of there. Like you said, I don't think having it be a division game is a ton of fun. So we'll eliminate all the division games. And then you've got Texans. Those are kind of the other options. But week 2, the Chiefs host the Cincinnati Bengals.
Oh, see, that would have been fun too.
Way better. Way better. Give me Bengals Chiefs tonight because that's still a AFC Championship game from a couple of years ago.
Uh-huh.
Joe Burrow coming back. But that to me fits this so much better. And then give me that Ravens game later in the year. Give me Chiefs Broncos week. Give me Bengals Chiefs week 1. You can go Chiefs Broncos week 2, and then plug in Chiefs Ravens at that Chiefs Broncos game on November 10th.
Mm.
That would be such a preferable way to do this.
I agree. There just had to have been a better game this weekend.
Yeah, and I want to learn something tonight.
Yeah,
I want to be able to walk away from that game going, "Hey, I know something." But we're not gonna learn anything about where these two teams sit in the AFC because we watched the Lions beat the Chiefs at home last year in Kansas City in Week 1.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, "Oh man, hey, watch out, the Lions might be something." And they were. The Lions were really good, and I think they're going to be really good again this year. But that was a sloppy game. It was not the quality of game you would have gotten if you got Chiefs Lions later in the year. So, it's cool.
Yeah.
I'll obviously be tapped in and excited that regular season football is back, but I can't if the Ravens lose this game by 30, I'm not writing the Ravens off for the year. And vice versa.
No.
I don't know.
You know, the Chiefs, didn't they lose week 1 last year because Kelce missed a game and they dropped a couple of balls?
Yeah, Kelce was out and Chris Jones was also out.
Oh, yeah. Man, I don't know. I mean, just like going through the schedule, you always have to have the Chiefs. You have the Super Bowl winner to open the season, right? Mm-hmm. But if you didn't, like there are other games I would like to see, like instead of this. I would love like a Thursday night Rams-Lions game tonight would have been perfectly fine for me.
Hmm.
Even a Jets-Niners, that would have been perfectly fine for me.
No, it's got to be the defending champ, though.
Yeah, it's got to be the defending champ.
Yeah. I'll just say this now. I think the Chiefs are going to have their 96 Bulls season this year.
Oh.
Yeah. I think they want a three-peat. And I think after last year, where there was so much doubt thrown their way and so many questions about if they're any good. And you got all this stuff with Travis Kelce. Is he going to retire? Like, oh, obviously Travis Kelce's off the field life is now somehow overtaken how successful he is on the field in the kind of mainstream discourse. I think the Chiefs are going to be so locked in, and maybe their defense won't be as good. I know they lost L'Jarius Sneed. But I think they are going to put together an offensive season and that just makes any step back they take defensively irrelevant. I think they're going to win like 15 games, and I think they're going to win another Super Bowl. I
You're calling your shot now? Your preseason pick?
I'm not trying to be hot take guy here by picking the Chiefs. Like, that's everybody's doing that, but I think we're going to see a thoroughly dominant year from them, where I don't think it's going to be a 10-7 and they sneak in and they got to go on the road a bunch in the playoffs. I think this is going to be the Chiefs team that everybody goes, oh man, this was the culmination of this run. Like, wow, they are incredible.
Okay.
That's how I think this year is going for
them. No, I think they're going to go for that, but I also think that there's like plenty of teams out there that are stumbling blocks.
Okay.
But like throughout your career, like if you're a guy like Patrick Mahomes and you have an opportunity to do something that's just like very, very, very crazy to win three Super Bowls in a row. I mean, that would be just like outlandish.
Unprecedented.
In the modern era for someone to be able to go and do this, right?
Mm-hmm.
You got to go for it. You got to be all in. That's the goal. I think it will be, this season should be the Chiefs against everybody. Everyone trying to take down the Chiefs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it could be a really, really cool sight to see as his team is trying to trudge towards like something just so incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And who can knock them off? Or is this team just like, what did we call them last year? The team of destiny, week 2.
Week 2.
The San Francisco 49ers and Miami Dolphins were the teams of destiny.
They sure were.
They were.
Yeah, I look at their schedule, and you mentioned stumbling blocks. Maybe it's the Ravens. Maybe the Bengals are going to be awesome. But I'm not thrilled with what their division looks like. They visit the Bills this year. I think you see the Bills take a little bit of a step back. The Texans is as good as I think the Texans might be. I don't see them going into Kansas City and winning again. Like, that's, I think it starts tonight too. I think the Chiefs are going to lock in. I think they're going to beat the heck out of the Ravens, and it's going to set a course for this dominant three-peat of a season, because that's what they are shooting for.
I'm with it. I can't. I'm with you.
I'm not doubting a locked-in Patrick Mahomes.
And that is why I kept Patrick Mahomes in fantasy football.
Smart move. All right. We got plenty more NFL stuff to get to. Matt Barrows of The Athletic said a fascinating thing on the radio yesterday, and James and I are going to dig in to find out if he's right. He's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. Jiffy Lube's a sponsor here on ESPN 1320 and Sacramento Sports Leader. Fun.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
I have no idea what I did wrong setting up our show today.
Chaos.
I know it's not like a super secret. I just didn't remove a couple of the things I needed to remove, so I'm having to hit extra buttons. That just throws me off my rhythm a little bit. So we're going to delete all of those and that.
We have rules here, Kyle. I don't touch buttons.
That's true.
I don't
touch. You should.
Yep.
I need to do better about that. Donnie, this is not NOM. This is bowling. There are rules. Shout out to the Big Lebowski. So Matt Barrows was on 95.7 The Game yesterday. Matt Barrows, friend of the program, covers the 49ers for The Athletic and has for a long time. And he said something to, I believe it was Steiny and Guru yesterday, that I did a hard double take at what he said. Because Matt Barrows is not a take artist. Matt Barrows is a journalist who has covered the 49ers for 20, I think this is his 23rd season he's been around. And what he says carries weight. And when he says something like this, I pay attention. And typically when he says something like this, I just believe him. But in this instance, I'm not sure I do. And I would like to dig into it. So what Matt Barrow said on 95.7 The Game was that this year's 49ers team, the 2024 49ers, are the best team that they have, that they've had, since he started covering the club in 2002. And that's wild to me, not because they've had a ton of awesome teams. We were going through it today, and this is something I think that gets kind of lost to history a little bit. They didn't make the playoffs, though, 3-0-4.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to Alex Smith. And then after, so they made the playoffs in 2002. They didn't make it again until Jim Harbaugh got there in 2011. Then they went to the playoffs three times. And then 2014 through 2018, they were not a playoff team.
Nope.
They've had some really, really bad stretches of football since 2002 when Matt Barrows took over. So we can eliminate a ton of teams. We can just wipe them off the map. But I think you start after, okay, so the team had to have made the playoffs. So that gives you 2002, gives you 2011, 12, 13, and then this present run, 19, 21, 22, and 23.
Yeah, so 14 years we can just wipe out.
Just gone. Get them out of my face.
Yep.
So what I wanted to do to try and do this exercise, because trying to go team by team and then assessing each team and then trying to compare it to a different team down the, it's nigh impossible. So we're going to go position by position here.
Okay.
And I haven't done this exercise yet. I want to work this out with you. So then 916-909-1320, 916-909-1320. If you would like to participate in the conversation, please do. Best 49ers team since 2002. We're going to start at quarterback.
Okay.
And I take this, I'll tell you why in a second. But I don't take this necessarily as starting quarterback. I just take the entire quarterback room into account.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that matters a little bit, particularly with the 49ers, because they've had so many injury problems under center for the last 6 years. I think 2012 stands out to me.
As a better quarterback room?
Yeah.
Or as the best quarterback? Okay, so yeah, that is a very, very good quarterback room, and it's Alex Smith and Colin Kaepernick, right?
Yes, and the best version of Colin Kaepernick.
Yes, yes. I would say that while I get that, I am still, just as a passer, just as a pure passer and a guy who's going to lead your team,
mm-hmm.
I'm really, really feeling like Purdy is giving that quarterback room a run for its money. Like, statistically speaking, Purdy's mm-hmm. the greatest, like, he's had the greatest single seasons in mm-hmm. 49ers history,
mm-hmm.
which is absolutely wild to consider when Joe Montana and Steve Young were mm-hmm. both Hall of Famers, you know, have been there in the last 35 years. So I don't know. Like, it's tough, but I definitely think Purdy's in the running. And I think that this version, this season's version of Purdy
mm-hmm.
could throw for 4,800 yards.
Yeah. 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 That's, if you're going to take this to its logical conclusion with Brock Purdy,
mm-hmm.
and consider what he did last year in his first full season as a starter,
mm-hmm.
that all the things you just mentioned, best statistical season by a 49ers quarterback in history. And you consider also, this is another thing that's gotten kind of lost, he had major elbow surgery last offseason.
Yeah.
he didn't get to do a full offseason of getting better at quarterback. He had to rehab his elbow. And then he stepped in day two of training camp and was on a little bit of a pitch count and still finishing up his rehab. So there's a very real chance that the season Brock Purdy puts together this year is just puts him head and shoulders above everybody.
Yeah.
Regardless of since 2002, regardless of what the rest of the quarterback room looks like. So That's fair. I'll lean 24 here and assume for now that we're going to get a better version of Brock Purdy in 2024.
Yeah, because, I mean, for my money, he's better than Jeff Garcia. Yeah. There's no question he's better than Tim Rattay or Alex Smith or Trent Dilfer or Sean Hill. Mm-hmm. And then Alex Smith for another 3 years. And then Blaine Gabbert is the leading quarterback 1 year for this team.
Sure was.
And Nick Mullins, leading quarterback for this team 1 year. Like there have been, and even Jimmy Garoppolo. I mean, he's just a much better player than Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yep.
He took the same team and you're like, oh my goodness, that's what this looks like with a real quarterback.
Yeah, he's just a better player.
Which is something like, he's a better player, but it's something that, again, we go back to Stephen Ruiz's, like his whole idea, right?
Mm-hmm.
You do have this moment where you take one quarterback who's done good things and you replace him with a young, undrafted, well, final pick in the draft in his rookie season, final nine games, whatever it was. And he just shows you that what he looks like, he's so much better.
Mm-hmm.
And it was almost instantaneous. You're like,
yeah,
holy cow, this guy just, he has a better grasp of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where, like, these problems with, hey, I don't know if he would be able to do this same thing somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but there was someone else that was there before who couldn't do the same thing he's doing. And you can say, well, Jimmy Garoppolo is just not that good. You can make that argument. And okay. But there's also a possibility that Brock Purdy is just this dude.
Yeah, I think that's right. The Jimmy Garoppolo thing is interesting to me because he had started to play so much better right before he got hurt. He was playing the best football he'd played since 2017 when he kind of burst on the scene and won those five games at the end of that year after he got traded to San Francisco. So he had started to play really well with Christian McCaffrey being integrated into the offense, and they're starting to figure things out. And okay, hey, look at Jimmy figuring out, he's making plays on the run and he's making secondary reaction plays. And holy smokes, where has this been the last 3 years? Mm-hmm. And then he gets hurt and Brock Purdy comes in and kind of does all those things. Meanwhile, Jimmy goes to Vegas and gets paid and stinks. And that's where I think if somebody wants to, this is a little bit separate from the conversation that we're having about best team or whatever, but that's where I don't have much pushback. If somebody wants to say, well, if you want an example of what would happen to Brock Purdy if he leaves the Kyle Shanahan and 49ers ecosystem, look no further than Jimmy Garoppolo in Vegas. No, the pushback for me is, well, I think Brock's just a better player than Garoppolo.
Yeah.
But the fall off was so precipitous for Garoppolo when he went to Vegas that I think it lends credence to the argument that, man, if you put Brock Purdy on a, let's say, last year's Vegas team, maybe he's better than Jimmy, but it's not like he's going to elevate them to the postseason or anything crazy like that.
No, I understand. I'm with you. And, you know, like, I'm not making this a like Drew Bledsoe, Tom Brady, like he steps in and all of a sudden. But who knows what the future holds?
Yeah, the only real argument for me with if you wanted to put somebody instead, again, if you're just assuming you're going to get the best version of Brock Purdy this year, or you're going to say 23 or 24 Brock Purdy is the best quarterback since 2002.
Yep,
which is the point of this exercise. We're just going position by position since 2002. And I think the only argument is Colin Kaepernick in 2012.
Yeah.
That run he went on was so sick. And again, he didn't sustain it. And we can do the rest of the show on why his career fell apart. But that I want to make sure that gets mentioned because he was so freaking good.
Mm-hmm.
Through that second half of that regular season and into the playoffs, he was really, really good. But yeah, so if you want to say it's 24 Brock Purdy, and that's part of the impetus for saying that this is the best 49ers team since 2002, which is what Matt Barrows said on 95.7 yesterday, I think that's okay. The running back room.
Hang on, I want to mention one thing too.
Go ahead.
If Barrows would have started in like 2000, you could make the argument that Jeff Garcia's run in his first 3 years as a 49ers quarterback would compete with this. I mean,
Jeff Garcia was good.
42-78 in his second season with 31 touchdowns and 35-38 with 32 touchdowns his second season.
Mm-hmm.
He fell off to only 21 touchdowns in 2002.
Right.
But those first 2 years were really good.
Yeah.
So
Yeah. What about the running back room?
The running back room is tough because I think that McCaffrey is the best running back in football today.
Mm-hmm.
But I also, if you go through every single one of these years and you see like the 10-year stretch of Frank Gore,
mm-hmm.
there were years where Frank Gore and others,
mm-hmm.
I think, were better collectively than what we see from McCaffrey by himself. Like the other mm-hmm. guys with McCaffrey are unproven. Elijah Mitchell's out for the season.
Mm-hmm.
So the running back room, I'm going to, like, they're some years here where, you know, Frank Gore put up 1,700 yards, 1,600 and something yards.
Sure.
I mean, he was incredible. And then the other guys around him, I think, were really good. Now, if we're going to include Juszczyk, okay.
Mm-hmm.
But still, I don't think they use Juszczyk enough to make him part of the conversation.
Yeah.
It's tough. But they're like, to single out one year where Frank Gore was better than what McCaffrey will be this year is tough.
So I'm not going to say McCaffrey this year. I'm going to say McCaffrey last year. I don't think he's going to repeat what he did last season.
I agree with you.
Like I think they're going to, his workload's going to scale back a little bit. He's 28 now. It's just really hard to do what he did 2 years in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's a perfect marriage of skill set and coaching staff and offensive personnel. Like I totally get that, but I'll bank on Brock Purdy being better this year. I'm not going to bank on Christian McCaffrey being better. And I think the only argument from a team standpoint is the 2019 running back room, which was Raheem Mostert and Tevin Coleman and Matt Breida.
And Jeff Wilson.
And Jeff Wilson, who didn't get a ton of burn in 19, but still a good NFL player. That's the only top-to-bottom room that I think is probably competing with this group.
Okay.
What I can't get behind, and I saw... I believe it was Barrow's coworker at The Athletic, David Lombardi, was going through and basically defending Barrow's take and saying the 49ers improved at every position this offseason. I don't think they improved at running back, dude. You're getting a 1 year older Christian McCaffrey. Elijah Mitchell is a good player, and he's not available now.
Yep.
Jordan Mason has been effective in 83 career carries, but still a question mark.
Mm-hmm.
Isaac Arendo, huge question mark. And Patrick Taylor is a special teams guy. So I can't comfortably say they improved at running back. I'll say last year's running back room, thanks to Christian McCaffrey, was better than this year's.
I would agree with you fully. And I don't know that they're... I mean, it's possible that McCaffrey doubles down and mm-hmm. has the same type of season. It's just really difficult. Like,
yeah, man.
I don't see them shifting gears where he gets a lot more opportunity.
I would agree.
And I think you're also going to be cognizant, there we go, jeez, of the fact that you cannot hit, you know, have him have 22 to 25 touches a game,
mm-hmm.
that you're going to have to get Jordan Mason some carries. You're going to have some short yardage plays where you need to hand the ball to somebody who it's okay if he gets
mm-hmm.
walloped at the line,
yeah.
as opposed to McCaffrey. And I hope that they do that, but I don't have faith in that Shanahan will actually do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the wide receiver room,
yeah.
I'm torn on this.
Okay.
So Terrell Owens in 2002 was the best wide of Brandon Ayuk, Debo Samuel, pick your favorite receiver they've had since 2002.
Mm-hmm.
Terrell Owens the best, in my opinion, Terrell Owens is one of the three best wide receivers who's ever put on a football uniform. But the rest of that receiving core in 02 was not good. So they're out.
Okay.
I think it has to be a receiving core from the last 5 or 6 years because none of the 2011, 2012, or 2013 teams were particularly talented at that position. It was a lot of Michael Crabtree. It was a lot of Mario Manningham.
Anquan Boldin.
Anquan Boldin was in there.
Yep.
But never all kind of peaking at the same time.
Yeah.
I wanted to go hipster and say 2021 ahead of 2023 or 2024.
Okay.
Because that was the Debo All-Pro season.
Mm.
1,770 scrimmage yards, 14 total touchdowns. But dude, last year, I think it's a wash. I think it's a push for me. Last year and this year.
Yeah, I do think that this year has the potential to be better.
I think the potential is there for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're going to have a little bit of awkwardness with Ayuk. Maybe he finishes with 1150 or 1200 yards. Mm-hmm. But I think Debo also being near a contract year, if not in a contract year, is going to be highly efficient. I also think that Juwan Jennings has cemented himself as like a really, really good option. And then I like the other guys. I like Cowings. I like the Ricky Pearsall pick, although who knows what that when he'll play. So I do like the room, and I think it has the potential to be better than last year.
Yeah, I'm just Brandon Ayuk was 1,342 scrimmage yards or receiving yards last year. Excuse me, 7 total touchdowns. Debo Samuel, 1,117 total scrimmage yards and 12 total touchdowns. Like,
yeah,
asking that group to be better this year. And maybe down the line, Ricky Pearsall and Jacob Cowing are significantly better than, who was it last year? Ronnie Bell and Ray McLeod. Like, yeah, no doubt. Cowing already looks like he's going to be a better offensive option than McLeod. But I got to see it with Brandon Ayuk first after he held out or held in for the entire preseason and training camp. I got to see it with Debo Samuel. All signs point to Debo looks like all-pro Debo again. But even if he does what he did last year and goes 1,200 scrimmage yards and double-digit touchdowns, you'd feel pretty good about that. I think it's a push with last year minimum. I can't say that the 2024 receiver room is definitely better than last year.
No, I would agree with you.
I can't get there. How am I going to write that? 23/24? Yeah, I'm calling it a push.
Right. Okay.
At tight end, this is not the best version of George Kittle, and Eric Saubert and Jake Tungis are not...
No. This is not it.
Yeah, honestly, if we're talking top to bottom tight end room, 2011 group is pretty good. 2012 group is good too.
Yeah, the 2018 group is really good. Like there,
that was peak George Kittle. That was the year he set the record.
Yeah, but receiving yards. But you're right. The Vernon Davis, Delanie Walker.
Yeah, man. Vernon Davis, Delanie Walker, Garrett Celek.
Yeah,
in 2012.
It was really good.
That's a good group.
Yeah.
It wasn't. It wasn't the best version of Vernon Davis. He had 41 for 548 and 5 touchdowns. It wasn't his best statistical season. The year prior to that, he went 67 catches, 792 yards, and 6 touchdowns. And you still had Delanie Walker there then. I'm going 2011 or 2012 in the tight end room.
Okay. I'm with you.
That's a fantastic group.
Yeah, I think you can go there, and you could also just like Kittle. Like, I don't remember who the other tight ends are on the 2018 roster, but that is a very, I mean, like, just him by himself is incredible. Oh, it's Garrett Celek.
Ross Dwelly?
Ross Dwelly.
Yeah.
And Cole Wick.
Oh, the great Cole Wick.
Yeah, Ross Dwelly had,
of course.
Had
I believe,
two catches.
Cole Wick?
He did not
catch.
Was he
in Louisville? No, that was Cole Hikutini. Where did Cole Wick go to school?
Cole Wick...
This is a thing only I care about. I'm so sorry for everybody listening.
Oh,
Incarnate Word.
Incarnate Word.
Of course.
I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, Cole Catini was Louisville, I believe. And then the offensive line. I'm going 2012 for the offensive line as well, dude. That 2012 O-line was so sick.
Yeah.
It was Joe Staley. Mike Iupati is an all-pro. Jonathan Goodwin was awesome at center. Alex Boone was a very good right guard. And Anthony Davis was an excellent right tackle.
Yeah.
That offensive line, just top to bottom, was
And
sick.
How long until Anthony Davis retired?
A few years.
Was it?
Yeah, it was a few seasons. So that was 2012. He retired in 15. Retired after 14. He played 7 games. He had concussion problems. Retired in 15. Came back for a game in 2016, and that was it.
Oh, got it.
He's still only 34.
That's wild.
About to turn 35.
He's younger than Trent Williams.
Oh, yeah. He was drafted.
Crazy.
Same draft.
Oh, wow.
Same draft as Trent Williams.
That's wild.
Yeah, man. So I'm going 2012 with that group. With that, I just the bottom line so far as we wrap up the offense here, quarterback we're going with the 24 group. Running back, we're going 23. Wide receiver, it's a 23-24 push. But then tight end and offensive line, we're going 2012 as best position group since 2002. I think this 2012 team is so slept on. They were so freaking good, man.
Yeah. No.
And we'll talk about it when we get to the defensive side. But I just you talk about 2012 and you go Alex Smith the first half of the year playing as well as he played, and then he gets that concussion against the Rams. Colin Kaepernick comes in. I believe they tied that game, but then he makes his debut on Monday Night Football against the Bears. And if you remember, that Bears team was setting records for takeaways. I think they had a takeaway in every game that year except against the 49ers. And Colin Kaepernick comes out in his starting debut and lights them up on Monday Night Football. And he hit the deep crosser to Kyle Williams, and Jim Harbaugh loses his mind on the sideline. And it looked like Colin Kaepernick and the running quarterback, because that was the same year as RG3 came into the league and lit it up as a rookie. It looked like he was going to take over the league, and obviously that style of play didn't. An evolution of it has started to take over the NFL.
Yeah.
But I just don't want it to get lost. That's going to be my goal.
Okay.
I don't want the 2012 team, because the 2019 team was really good, and obviously 23 was really good, and the 24 team has a chance to be good, but that 2012 group, I'm not sure that I would take a team top to bottom over them.
Okay.
They were, man.
I'm with you. Yeah.
5 yards short of taking a late lead in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that offensive line was awesome.
Offensive line was super good.
Yeah, that's a good
team.
It's tough. Like, I can easily, we got like a couple of minutes before we go to break. I can easily make the claim that this is the most talented Sacramento Kings team I've ever covered in my 15, going into my 15 season.
It's not even close.
I don't think it's close.
I don't think it's, no.
No, I mean, 2 years ago, yeah, the team was really good. I think this team has the potential to be just way better. Like, I might be wrong. Like, just overall talent, though.
It would be
though.
Super funny to do this same exercise with the Kings from, like, 02 to 22.
Well, I mean, 02.
Sorry, not 02.
2010 is when I started covering the team.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's not even close. Yeah.
Yeah.
Although, you know, we could sit here and debate the DeMarcus Cousins versus Domantas Sabonis, like, just individual years, and we could debate, like, the Rudy Gay years versus whoever you want to put it, small forward. I guess that would be DeMar DeRozan, so DeMar DeRozan's going to win.
Yeah, but the top end talent, I feel like, is just so overwhelming.
Yeah.
Because you can call, if you want to call Sabonis and Cousins a wash, again, if you feel strongly one way or the other, fine, but
yeah.
I think there's an argument to be made for both. But nobody's touching De'Aaron Fox. Nobody's touching DeMar DeRozan.
No, it's just whether other versions of De'Aaron Fox are better than him.
Yeah, right.
And then Keegan Murray, you expect Keegan Murray to be better.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of players on this team that you just, like, expect to be better than they were before.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, I think by the end of this year, I think you'll comfortably take Keegan Murray over Rudy Gay.
Yep.
Comfortably. I'm sure a lot of people would do it right now. But, all right, we'll get to the defensive side of the ball after this. After this break, we'll continue talking NFL. We got some stat projections from ESPN for this season that we'll dive into, and the Giants paid somebody. We'll talk about that as well. That's James. I'm Kyle. We're the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube, here on ESPN 1320 Sacramento Sports Center. Hour number two. Sorry about that, James. You couldn't hear any of that. That's okay. We're back. Hour number two. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We are hanging out with you until noon, and then we'll hand it off to D'Lo and Casey. This program is sponsored by Jiffy Lube. Visit JiffyLube.com to find the location nearest you. Hassan Whiteside nicknames. Agent Block.
Okay.
And Count Blockula.
That's it?
Just two.
Oh, no.
You were saying at the break that he one time in a car ride?
In a car ride interview with Jason Wise, who was King's, like, I don't know, what do they call, like, their creative team?
Okay.
You know who Jason Wise is?
Yeah, I've heard the name.
Okay, he was there for years, for, mm-hmm. I don't know, 15, 16, 17 years,
okay.
And then left, and him and his wife moved to Miami, and I think they both were covering
Hassan Whiteside,
the MLS team with Messi.
Sure, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
But he was regaling this guy with all of his nicknames.
Yeah, and Hassan Whiteside, for an entire like 15-minute car ride, had like one nickname after another after another after another.
He just said, here's all my nicknames?
Oh yeah, he just kept going. There might be a video of it somewhere. I'll have to
That's
look.
A great bit, actually.
Yeah.
Like, just giving yourself nicknames off the fly.
Yeah. You know, it's been a long time, but yeah, I'm sure we can dig it up.
I hope so. That sounds like a great time. Okay, so Matt Barrows on 95.7 The Game. We'll run through this a little bit quicker here. Matt Barrows on 95.7 The Game said this is the best 49ers team that he has covered since 2002.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not, I have some pushback on it, but we're just kind of going through position by position to see how many position groups this year's team actually has the best version of since 2002.
Mm-hmm.
We said 2024, Brock Purdy, probably going to be the best quarterback. But we went with the running back room in 2023, assuming Christian McCaffrey won't replicate his success from last season. The wide receiver room, mostly a push. Tight end room, we went back to 2012. Offensive line, we went back to 2012.
Mm-hmm.
Defensive line, I'm going 2019. That's the other team that I don't want to say gets slept on because it was such an early version of what this team has become. It was second-year Fred Warner. It was third-year George Kittle. It was rookie Debo Samuel.
Mm-hmm.
Emmanuel Sanders was in the mix, and he obviously did not stick around. As Kendrick Bourne, a running back by committee, running back room by committee, as Tevin Coleman. That was the Raheem Mostert coming out party, of course, in that NFC title game. But I'm going with the 2019 defensive line. He had prime Eric Armstead.
Yep.
Yeah, prime DeForest Buckner. You get rookie year Nick Bosa was defensive rookie of the year. You get the best version of D Ford that you got during his brief time in San Francisco.
And well, he was here forever. He just never played.
Yeah. I know that trade went down like as a disaster, but objectively, when D Ford was on the field
mm-hmm.
with Nick Bosa, they were really, really good at getting to the quarterback. So you had D Ford. Sheldon Day was really good for that team. There's one more name I'm missing. I know Kevin Givens played a little bit. I can't remember, but I'm going 2019. That's my, I feel good about it.
Okay.
I gotta go find what name I'm missing.
I don't think it's even all that close.
Really?
I mean, well, you do have the years with Aldon Smith and Justin Smith.
Yeah. That's the,
I mean, those two together were just absolutely devastating.
They were so sick.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough because those years were, but when Bosa is healthy and like.
Oh, DJ Jones. Okay, go on.
Okay.
Sorry.
I don't think there's a way for this year's defensive line to match up against almost any of those. Like, I think that they will be good.
Yeah.
And I think that they'll probably get more pressure on the quarterback than they have in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they can hold up against a run up the middle and stuff, I'm not sure. Like, I don't know if this fully is going to look, like, spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that, you know, when you have linebackers and you have hard-hitting safeties and stuff like that, you're going to be just fine.
So it's tough to loop in 2012 because in 2012 they ran the 3-4. So Aldon Smith is technically a linebacker.
Okay.
Ahmad Brooks technically a linebacker. But I'm going to just include them in the defensive line conversation for the purposes of this discussion. 2012 was Ray McDonald having his best year as a pro. Not a good guy, but had his best year as a pro. Isaac Sopawaga at nose tackle, really, really good player.
Yes.
Justin Smith, borderline Hall of Famer, really, really good player.
I think he's a Hall of Famer.
I think there's an argument for him to be made for sure. You had Aldon Smith setting records. He had 19 and a half sacks that year in 2012. Ahmad Brooks on the other side, 6.5 sacks. Ahmad Brooks is a really good player. If you want to take 2012 over 2019, I'm definitely not gonna quibble.
I would probably take it.
You go 12 over 19?
Yeah, I would.
Okay. That's fair. Again, coming back to 2012, The more we do this, the more I land on the 2012 49ers being the best team since 2002. And I think that continues when you look at linebacker. Now, I have had this argument with Joe Shasky before.
Okay.
Joe Shasky, huge Niner fan, 49ers historian. He says he will take Fred Warner over any linebacker the Niners have had. And there's, like I said, argument to be made. But the Navarro Bowman Patrick Willis duo in 2012 was sick. It was so good.
Yeah, I mean,
but Warner and Greenlaw last year also really good.
Yeah, they're both great.
Yeah,
I'm taking Willis and Bowman.
They were both all pros that year. You had two linebackers, both making the all pro.
They were so incredible, man.
Yeah, dude. I think Warner and Greenlaw fit as like the prototypical modern linebackers for sure. When they're both healthy, they are two of the six best linebackers in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Off-ball linebackers. But I default to Willis and Bowman.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna lean, and I think the 2012 version of both of those guys is the best version.
Yeah, like I don't think Navarro Bowman makes the Hall of Fame.
No, he didn't play long enough.
Three-time Pro Bowl. He was a four-time All-Pro though, so mm-hmm. maybe. But you know, the knee injury.
He was never the
devastating.
Same.
Devastating.
Yeah. Here's something that's messing me up. I felt like Justin Smith in 2012 was so old. I was like, man, Justin, he's just been around. He's 33.
No.
I'm older than Justin. I am now older than Justin Smith was in 2012.
Oh, no.
That's messing with me right now. I'm having a hard time with it.
That's tough.
I would call, if you want to call 2012 and 2023 a push, the bottom line is 2024 is not better than either of those.
No.
Because it's going to be Devondre Campbell. Okay, maybe he's fine, but he's not going to be nearly as good as Dre Greenlaw or Patrick Willis or Navarro Bowman.
No.
It's not even going to be close.
No.
So if you want to call 12 and 23 a push, I think that's okay.
How long is Greenlaw out for?
At least 4 weeks.
But we're thinking more.
I would guess more.
And do we have anything?
He tore his Achilles in February, man.
I know. Well, but the new Achilles surgery is not nearly as invasive. It depends on how they did the surgery, because mm-hmm. the old Achilles surgery was like to put a zipper up the back of your calf, which
gross.
Which is just like...
Sounds horrible. Real,
well, it would take so long to recover both the calf muscle and just the healing process mm-hmm. on the back of the leg. And then they started doing like the little scope. But it just depends on the type of Achilles injury.
I see.
Of course, they're getting like the best doctors known to man, but wasn't it Kobe that came back like in no time from an Achilles? It was like 6 months.
Yeah, so, Cam Akers too.
Yeah, so there's a possibility for him to come back relatively quick, but you said February, yeah.
Yeah, just that, like that's the thing is even if it's 8 months, you're talking October.
Yeah.
10 months, you're talking December. I'm not banking on it for sure this year. And even if he does come back, what does he look like compared to what he looked like last year?
Yeah.
And the year before that.
Yeah.
So cornerback, I think this is going to be their best cornerback room.
You think so?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I think Charvarius Ward is playing at a really high level. I think you're gonna get a leap from D'Amador Lenore after he took a jump last year. I think you get another jump from him this year.
Mm-hmm.
Isaac Yiadom or Renardo Green as the third corner. I think you feel good about that. And whichever one doesn't start is going to be a really good depth piece. Rock Ya-Sin is a quality veteran who had a really nice camp and a really good preseason. He's also on the roster. I think this will be the best cornerback room they've had. And in 2012, it was Carlos Rogers and Terrell Brown, really good duo. 2019, it was Richard Sherman, but remember Akello Witherspoon started playing really well, and then he hurt his foot, and Emmanuel Mosley came in, and he was okay, and then Witherspoon came back, but then lost his job twice, including in the playoffs. Emmanuel Mosley turned into a nice player. He just wasn't there yet in 2019. He had second-team All-Pro Richard Sherman, future Hall of Famer out there, but I the depth was not there the way it was. I guess Tremaine Brock also in 2012, but
yeah.
I'm going 24 in the cornerback room. That's a good group.
Okay. I'm with you. The safeties, though, like this year's safeties, we just don't know enough.
Too many question marks, man.
We just don't know enough.
If Talanoa Hufanga had not gotten hurt last year, I think I would. I could see it for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But they. Jimmy Ward, prime Jimmy Ward, was better than I think what Jair Brown is going to be this year. He's better than any version of Talanoa Hufanga they're going to get.
Yeah.
And when you go back and you look at 2022, and it was I guess Jimmy Ward was in the slot that year, with Tayshawn Gibson starting next to Talanoa Hufanga. He had an All-Pro Hufanga, but Tayshawn Gibson was just okay.
What about the older teams? Because I haven't gone back and looked even like the
Deshaun. I will ride with this. Deshaun Goldson and Dante Whitner.
Oh yeah,
the style of play that it would never work now because they both just ran around and just laid hats
just
like that was
people.
That would they yeah. are just gonna lay the wood.
Yeah,
pause and. I would lean that way over again. Like Jimmy Ward had some really good years, but never had another excellent player next to him. And when he could have in 2022, they moved him into the slot where he didn't get to play safety.
Mm-hmm.
So, all due respect to 2022 Talanoa Hufanga, who was good. I'm going with the 2011 or 2012 team.
Okay.
I'm probably going to go 11. I think 11, Whitner, and Goldson were better than 12, but it's nitpicking.
Okay.
And I feel like I've been biased towards the 2012 team, so I'm going to pick 2011 for my note keeping.
Okay. No, I'm with you.
All of this is to say the 2012 team is the best 49ers team that Matt Barrows has covered, and I don't think this year is going to be better.
I think it's still kind of a coin flip.
Okay.
I don't know. I think
between 2012 and this year?
Well, I mean, they win on the defensive line and the offensive line.
I don't even know that this year is going to be better than last year.
No, that's true. Man, it's tough. I mean, I guess when you're in it, you're like you want to avoid like talking like this way, right? Mm-hmm. In like crazy superlatives and like blowing this thing up and saying, oh, they're going to be. I mean, I think the argument could be made, but it's really tough to predict what a team is going to do, especially when. You're looking at a 20-year period where there were some really great teams included in that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, I'm taking the quarterback, I'm taking the wide receivers from this team, I'm taking the running backs from this team over almost any of them.
Okay, let's do this. Rapid fire. Are the 49ers better at quarterback this year?
Yes.
Okay, running back?
Than any year, but maybe last
year.
No,
2012 from 23 to 2024, did they get better at these positions? Quarterback,
yes.
Okay, running back,
even Steven.
Okay, wide receiver,
better.
They're better this year.
I think they're better this year.
Okay, tight end,
same. Well, actually, okay. I'm going to say last year's tight end group overall was better, just because I don't think they really have depth here.
Yeah, I would. I think I would agree with you. Offensive line.
This year is better.
I think
Pooney's better.
Yeah, I also think I agree with you. Defensive line?
No. Last year's defensive line was better. Well, I don't know because Bosa wasn't very good.
Yeah, he was productive but not dominant. They had to trade for defensive ends twice.
Yeah. Well, they might have to do the same thing this year.
Yeah, that's the thing is they go and you get Leonard Floyd and you get Yetur Gross-Matos and they bolstered their interior depth with Malik Collins and Jordan Elliott and I guess overall the depth on the defensive front is better this year.
Okay. Are they right now, especially with them only having like two or three defensive ends on the roster?
Yeah, three that you feel good about and Robert Beal, who's a second year player, didn't do a lot as a rookie. I think I go this year. You're getting a more locked in Nick Bosa.
Mm-hmm.
You have more depth on the interior. I think Leonard Floyd is going to be better than anybody that they've had across from Nick Bosa.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this year is better than last year. I think they've improved.
Okay.
Linebacker?
No.
Worse.
Worse.
They're worse to me.
Yeah.
Corner?
I think they're better.
I think they're better at corner this year, too. Yeah. And then it's safety.
I think they'll get to a point where they're as good or better than last year.
Yeah, I can't confidently say, because Jair Brown, I feel really good about. I've predicted him at NinersWire.com to go to a Pro Bowl this year.
Yep.
But Hufanga is still a huge question mark. That's one of the things that's kind of hanging over all of this. Mm-hmm. He tore his ACL in week 11. He just recently got back into practice. If he does play, what does that look like? It's always, everybody always says it's the second year after the ACL. If he's not playing at a high level, and that's a pretty significant question mark, because while he was really good in generating turnovers and creating splash plays and doing all that, he got caught looking a lot or got caught out of position a lot by going and trying to make one of those splash plays.
Yeah.
And hey, the quarterback scrambling, he's going to go get him up Dante Pettis wide open down the field for a touchdown against the Bears, because Hufanga inexplicably vacated the deep half he was in. So I'm interested to see with Hufanga how his game translates in the first season coming off an ACL tear.
Okay.
Because his athleticism was more than functional. He didn't test well, but you watch him athletically on the field, and he obviously belongs as an NFL athlete. But it wasn't like jump off the screen, holy crap, his athleticism. So maybe that'll help him, because he doesn't have to rely on that so much. But if it's sapping whatever athleticism he did have, those splash plays are going to be fewer and far between. Fewer and further between? Fewer and further between. Few and far between.
Yeah.
And if you're taking that out of his game with a blown coverage here or there, and he's still jumping snap counts, and I'm wary for sure that you're going to get an all-pro caliber Talanoa Hufanga this year.
Mm.
And Tayshawn Gibson was pretty good last year.
He is all right.
Jair Brown was okay when he came in, so
I think he'll be better. Yeah. Jair Brown will be better. No, I think this team has... I think it's interesting we're talking about the 49ers like this, because I think last year's 49ers team was the most talented team in the NFL. And I think this year it's very close again. They might be the most talented team from top to bottom in the NFL.
Yeah, I think I agree.
Yeah. I mean, whether they win the Super Bowl or not, that's not the point. You can be the most talented team and lose.
Yeah, and I think that's why there's so much urgency,
mm-hmm.
and so much hand-wringing and panicking, is because 2019, they weren't expected to make a run, but then they did.
Mm-hmm.
But 2021, everybody knew that was a really good team. 2022, they trade for Christian McCaffrey halfway through the year. Everybody knows that was a good team. 2023, same deal. This season, going through the preseason, you see Niners up near the top of a lot of power rankings, and they're up near the top in Super Bowl odds, and you go through like Pro Football Focus and ESPN analytics, and this is the best roster in football, and like, okay, that's great, but it's translated to nil.
Well, as far as like rings.
Yeah, but no, right. No, that's what I'm saying, though.
Yeah.
Is they've had this incredible run of success from just compared to, what was it, 03 to 2010?
Oh, yeah, where they didn't make the playoffs.
They didn't make the postseason. Right. So many teams, except like every team except the Chiefs, and who else has won one? The Buccaneers?
Mm. Yeah.
Is that right? Are they the only teams to win Super Bowl since 2019?
Oh, man. Yeah. I think you're right.
Yeah, the Chiefs, and I feel like I'm missing a super obvious thing.
Yeah.
The Chiefs won in 19, the Buccaneers won in 20.
And then 21 and 22. No.
The Chiefs won in 22 and 23.
Yeah, we're missing a year. Oh, the Rams.
The Rams in 2021. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, the Rams beat the Bengals. That's right. What a forgettable game.
Yeah, Stafford.
So, 28 other teams would love to be in the 49ers position,
mm-hmm.
for sure. And they're going in again with the most talented team. But it's so difficult to sit here and go, yeah, hey, they're going to be awesome. Look how talented they are. Matt Barrow says it's the most talented team that he's ever covered since 2002. Holy smoke. Okay. Heard it before. And they've not lifted a Lombardi trophy. So I can't. It's a weird spot to be because they're obviously talented. They should be one of the best teams in the league. They should be a Super Bowl favorite. All of that tracks, but then you start stacking up. Okay, well, they haven't gotten over the hump yet. Why haven't they gotten over the hump? Well, injuries. Yeah, no, for sure. But that's every team's had to deal with that. Oh, and there's the Jaquaski Tart drop. Oh, yeah, that was really tough. Yeah, okay. But really, what's been that? Well, Patrick Mahomes has gotten in the way to us. Like, oh, hit the brakes. Because you still got Patrick Mahomes in his prime hanging out.
Oh, yeah.
That's been the foil. Not to mention, now all of a sudden, the NFC is getting a lot better. And it's like, if it hasn't happened by now, I don't care anymore that they're the most talented team in the league. Because I agree with you. I think they are. But it just—it doesn't move me anymore. It moved me in 2022 when they got Christian McCaffrey. You're going, oh man,
mm-hmm.
like this might be a just dominant group. Okay, and they've been really good to be sure. But it just okay.
It's tough because you are at the end of the day, you're always judged by whether you win a Super Bowl or not.
100%.
And you're in an era where there's one guy in the way, and it really does feel like the 1990s in the NBA, mm-hmm. where like there were great players and great teams,
mm-hmm.
and they all lost to Michael Jordan. The only reason that Jordan didn't win 8 straight titles is because he took 2 years off.
Yep.
I mean, that's it. So like it's one of those things where you're looking at like this is an era where one quarterback is disturbing the legacy of so many players
teams. We need to get Patrick Mahomes to retire.
Oh, there it is. Yeah.
That's what I'm hearing from you.
Yeah.
But that's it. Like that's I think kind of the crux of all of this. We've talked a lot about Josh Allen recently as different quarterback rankings have come out.
Yeah.
Can you imagine what the thought process on Josh Allen would be if Patrick Mahomes had not gotten that field goal in the last 13 seconds?
Yeah.
And Josh Allen went into Arrowhead and he knocked off Mahomes and maybe goes and wins the Super Bowl. Like there's so many different, and then there's the 49ers aspect of it where the Niners were better than the Chiefs last year on paper.
Oh yeah.
And it didn't matter because they had number 15 and that was it. And I'm not talking about Juwan Jennings.
It's one of the toughest realities that we've seen in sports where there is one person. I mean, I don't know about you, but I didn't really enjoy watching the Cavs and Warriors go with 4 straight finals against each other. I didn't really care for it. Like, it was like, okay, this is not intriguing. This is not like a heavyweight fight and this is round 3 and we're getting to see this epic.
Right.
It's not fun. It wasn't fun watching the Dallas Cowboys run over the Buffalo Bills again and again and again. It wasn't entertaining. You kept getting to this moment where, but I think the one thing I would point out is that Mahomes and the way that the game is never secure. Mm-hmm. It's not over until the clock says 0-0 with Mahomes. It adds an element that you just can't ignore. He is high drama.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to watch. And you're just wondering, one of these times, it won't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, he did lose the Super Bowl. So one of these times, it won't happen again.
Yeah.
And you're just hoping that your team is there to be there for the moment. And that your team is so much better than him and his team that you don't have to worry about the final minute and a half of a game that you're up 17 points and there's no way to come back and you got him.
All you have to do is be that much better than the Chiefs.
Yeah.
Man, what a brutal position he puts people in. Okay, we got to hit a break. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll have the handoff. One of D'Lo or Casey. It'll be Casey today?
No, it was Casey yesterday. He was part of the 5 that were in here.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, when we had everybody in here. That's right. Okay, so I believe Damian Barling will be in here for the handoff. Today, that's coming up in about 15 minutes here on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Center.
Hey,
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Ravens Chiefs tonight, kicking off the 2024 NFL regular season. Chiefs favored by 3 at home against Baltimore. Patrick Mahomes v. Lamar Jackson to open the season. He said, would have liked to see this mid to late season when both teams are locked in, but I'll take a night. I'll take any meaningful football at this point. I'm there.
I'm here for football.
I can't. Like, I'm not going to complain too much.
Yeah, I cannot wait.
Hey, here's the thing. Tomorrow, the Packers and Eagles play in Brazil. The country that just recently banned X.
Oh my goodness.
Currently Twitter, currently X.
Yes.
So, are people covering the game going to have to go to Threads or Facebook? Or
I guess.
Are they just going to have to go super old school and we'll find out in the paper the next day what they thought? Live blogging? Is that what it's going to be? People going back to the live blog era? I think that's what I would do.
Yeah, yeah.
If I was tasked with going to Brazil to cover a Kings and Bucks game.
Wouldn't hate it.
And they said, hey, Twitter is banned. You can't use Twitter. I'd 100% fire up a live blog. Super old school. Timestamps and everything.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I think that would be one thing. We could also join John Bull on Threads and just hang out there.
I'm already on Threads.
Yeah, I'm on Threads too, but I don't participate on Threads all that often.
Yeah, I need to do better about it.
How many platforms do we have to be on? I mean,
it's copy pasting. I just forget that I have Threads. I forget that it's a thing for me because I don't have the Twitter app. I use Twitter, the mobile website.
Okay.
Yeah, I got rid of the app, and I did that partly so I wouldn't be on it as much, but partly because I didn't want to have the app on my phone anymore. So it's like, it's not going app to app. I just close out of the internet usually when I'm done, and I don't think to go to another app.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just got to be better about it. It's fine. Small ways to improve.
Yeah, I guess so.
Ravens, Chiefs tonight. Chiefs favored by 3. Who you got?
Chiefs.
Yeah, I think they're locked in. I think the Chiefs might steamroll these dudes tonight.
I'm super excited to see their receiving core.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sans Hollywood Brown so far.
Yeah, but yeah. I think that's not
maybe
a bad
Worthy,
thing.
The X factor?
That's not a bad thing because I think it does open things up for Worthy, and it does open things up for like Juju to kind of get back in the flow of things. And, you know, I think this receiving core there is just so much better than last year's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, like, the bar wasn't super high.
Oh no, the bar was like so low. That was
Yeah, and maybe this means that they keep Travis Kelce in the garage a little bit.
You know they won't.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Was he 35 now?
Yeah, but you know what I like about Rice on that team is that Rice basically runs a similar route and a similar style to what Kelce does.
Mm-hmm.
So adding these other pieces, whether it's Hardman, whether it's Juju, whether it's Worthy or Hollywood, like those guys aren't going to do what these other guys are already doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you can transfer some of what you've done with Kelce over to Rice. He's running a lot of, you know, short routes over the middle.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a lot of the same, like, facing Mahomes and then making a move off of the catch.
He's so good after the catch.
Yeah, yeah. I think he's really, he's going to have a good season. I don't know if he'll be the same player because of all these other receivers they've added, but I still think that receiving core has potential to be like one of the better in the league. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, and it's going to be the thing that's going to be tough for, and this is part of the reason I said earlier, I think they're going to have their 96 Bulls season, is because you talk about Travis Kelce, who's just a tough cover. Rashee Rice came on strong last year. Not only a tough cover, good at getting open in those short areas and turning a short throw into a chunk play, into an explosive play. But now you have that vertical element with Xavier Worthy, who has the fastest 40 time in the NFL. You bring in Hollywood Brown, and that's kind of been his bag as a pro, is the deep third of the passing game. So now they can actually attack defenses at all three levels mm-hmm. in a way that they couldn't last year. Last year it was, hey, Patrick, run around and find somebody in the short area and hopefully they can make a play.
Yeah.
It was a huge problem for them. And Kadarius Toney, their guy who was supposed to take the top off defenses, can't catch football. So I think there's a chance that we see just a lights out version of the Chiefs offense this year.
Yeah, by,
I think we see it tonight.
By like week four, I think Pacheco could be like dominant mm-hmm. because I think they will have opened the spacing up. Mm-hmm.
What a nightmare, man.
Yeah, they're going to be really tough to defend. Once they're healthy, once they've got a rhythm, they're going to be really, really difficult. I don't know. The Ravens are going to be great too. The Ravens have a, you know, really, really good team. And I forget, Travis Henry's there. And like
Derrick Henry.
Yeah. My bad. Yeah, yeah. They're going to punish people. Like, their run game should be just incredible.
Derrick Henry might have a... I don't have the numbers in front of me, so I don't want to say unprecedented. Derrick Henry might have the best season of his career.
Oh, that's
which
tough.
Is really which is hard to say because he's 29 now. Did he turn 30? He's 29. Yeah, he's 30. He turns 31 in January.
Okay.
And this is a guy who's had 2,027 yards and 17 touchdowns in a season. But dude, with the way this Ravens run game works and the fact that you have to factor in Lamar Jackson, there's a chance that Derrick Henry is able to get downhill in ways that he just never could in Tennessee.
No, that's true, but there's also like possibilities that he's going to lose carries to Lamar that, you know, I hope that...
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, he could lose touchdowns to Lamar. He's either going to have 20 or like he's going to have like 8. Yeah. I don't think there's any middle ground.
I hope it's the former because I think we have him on our...
We do have him.
On our fantasy team.
We do have him on our fantasy team.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, we'll... I don't know, man.
I'm here for it. I think this is going to be a really fun night of opening night football. I'm with you. I wish they would have pushed this game out to a later date. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I think it's still going to be... This is what you want. You want to see heavyweights. You want to see, like, excitement. Everyone... gearing up for the season, and you want to see the Chiefs. They've turned themselves into in the Mahomes era mm-hmm. into must see TV. Like mm-hmm. you can't turn away from them.
Yeah.
So like they're on all the time. But it's like I like when I'm watching football on Sundays. I'll have the Chiefs game on, and then I'll have the Niners game on, mm-hmm. and I'll watch them in their entirety with a secondary TV with Red Zone. Mm-hmm. With the volume up on Red Zone so I can sit there and listen to that mm-hmm. As opposed to, you know, just honing in on the one game that I'm watching.
Right.
But I still think it lends itself to like just like watching them play every single week is it's like watching Jordan play. Like yeah. It's magical. You're like, I can't believe I just saw that.
Yeah.
And he does it like 5 times a game where you're like, no one else can do that, and no one else has done that, and no one else would even try that.
Yep.
And not only did he do it, but he did it at such an elite level. You're like, dude, did you practice that? Like, how is that possible?
He does practice it. That's what's crazy.
Just sits around the house throwing underhand passes behind his back.
Yep. Why not?
All right.
Yeah, left-handed throw. Why not? Yeah. He's pretty remarkable. Let's put a pin in the NFL thing for a second. Some San Francisco Giants news came down late last night. A 6-year, $151 million contract for now Bay Area legend Matt Chapman. Congratulations to Matt Chapman. He got paid 6 years, $151 million for the 31-year-old. I love this idea for the Giants. Mm. 22 homers this year. He's batting .247, playing gold glove caliber defense. They need athletes in defense, and that is what Matt Chapman provides. If he's going to hit 20 homers a year, then that's even better. They needed to show that performing well like he has results in something.
Yeah.
And they needed to establish some kind of foundation with a veteran that wasn't just like, yeah, hey, here's Michael Conforto for a couple of seasons and here's Jorge Soler for half a season. That's not conducive to building a winning team or a winning culture. And so now you have an established veteran on a 6-year, $151 million contract He's going to hold down the hot corner. He's going to play great defense until he hangs up his spikes. I think he's going to hit. He's going to continue hitting enough to justify the deal, and now you can build out from there. You have that established vet in the locker room, and he was rewarded for what's been a terrific season for him.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like a lot of money. To be honest, $151 million for a guy, mm-hmm. which I've always enjoyed. I mean, we're talking, we're two A's fans here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this guy's ability to play defense is just top notch. I think he's tremendous. But he's more of a 6-7 hitter in the modern baseball world. And so it's a little bit of, it's a lot of money for a 6-7 mm-hmm. hitter. But at the same time, like the Giants have to start somewhere and they have to yep. do moves like this. And then they've got to do like three more moves like this in mm-hmm. order to build this thing up. And yeah. until they do that, you're always going to kind of be like waiting for that next mm-hmm. shoe to drop. It's not like, you know, again, like comparing him to the A's where it's just like this band of like 28-year-olds who mm-hmm. who had failed everywhere else and all of a sudden find a home and get the opportunity and start hitting, or young players that are coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's some hope and you're building something. The Giants just do everything so much differently. Mm-hmm. And it's almost awkward to a point. Like it feels like every position almost is a platoon
mm-hmm.
and you're trying to like save money here and there. And it never really feels like it's going to work. And then they pop off for 100 and something wins. And you're
if you think that you're going to have a hard time signing free agents, which has been the whole thing. Oh man, they always finish in second place. No, they got Carlos Correa, but there was a thing with the ankle and the physical, and they let him go. And if you think your problem is that you can't get free agents to stay, then when you do get one in the building on a short term deal, and that player outperforms that short term deal,
mm-hmm.
maybe you have to overpay, but at least it keeps them in the building. And if that's what you have to do to get quality players here, because if you let Matt Chapman hit the open market. And he gets a maybe he doesn't. Maybe he wants to go to Chicago or New York, and yeah, hey, he'll take a little less to go to one of those places. But hey, here's $651 million from the Giants right now.
Yeah,
like yeah, I'll take that. I'm not even going to test the open market,
especially Bob there.
Yeah, yeah, that's a guy he knows in the Bay Area where he spent so much time when he was with the A's. So good for Matt Chapman, good for the Giants. Love that we'll continue to watch the best defensive third baseman in the sport do his thing.
Yeah, I agree.
That's a lot of fun. The A's also DFA'd a person named Jansen Junk. Your thoughts?
It makes perfect sense that the A's would DFA Junk at this point in the season.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
I mean, in all honesty, like they just keep signing guys.
Mm-hmm.
Like even yesterday, some dude got DFA'd or he got waived by somebody and then mm-hmm. they claimed him off waivers. He's mm-hmm. batting like three something and got 17 homers at AAA this year. But again, mm-hmm. a 28-year-old.
Yeah.
You're the way that they build their teams though, you can almost respect that you get it. Like they're trying to find guys who are in their prime
mm-hmm.
and have gotten better and have filled out. And then all of a sudden you get them, you have team control of them over for 4 or 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a weird way to build a team, but I've also seen them find those guys and then build them up and then halfway through a season trade them and go out and get something of value.
Yeah.
And so, again, a weird way to build a team, but mm-hmm. I like their willingness to build a team better than I do the Giants, who you're like, you got the money, just go ahead and spend it.
Damian Borling in the building for the handoff. Damian, how's it going, man?
Out there arguing with Paul Marshall.
About?
Well, he
Did he drive by take you?
He did. Well, he's not a big. He's an Oakland Raider guy. Like he is a Raider black
Oakland
hole.
Raider.
Yes.
So
very,
he didn't
very
follow
much
them
so,
to Vegas.
Not at all.
Okay.
Oh.
Lived in Kansas City. It all started with a F the Chiefs thing. As he walked past me, I was like, oh, I got
well, among us.
I understand that. Like, oh, no problem.
And so then, that was the drive by take you.
Well, but then and that's fine though. Quick mm-hmm. conversation, and then you know. He talked about vandalism on his car, Chiefs fans segued to Cowboy fans. Cowboy segued to Dak Prescott's the most overrated quarterback in the league.
That's
it's like,
possible.
You know, I don't agree with that. And then he goes, he's just like Lamar Jackson, and I lost it. Uh-oh. I was like, now wait a minute. Lamar Jackson is not overrated. And then this was at 11:46 and a half, so they couldn't really let the takes fly. It was like, we're going to talk about this.
You want to get him in here?
You should just get him in here.
Paul
just...
in here. Yeah, Paul's a good dude. Like, he giving Kenny the same take right now.
He walked by me one day. I'm sitting there when I would sit out there and prep. And this is before I'd even met him yet. Hadn't even like, I'd like shook hands, but we hadn't talked yet.
Mm-hmm.
And he walks by and without stopping, just goes, LeBron James is the most overrated player in the history of basketball. And just kept going. He's like, whoa.
Paul.
You can't just throw that at me and bounce.
Paul Marshall got takes, man. I love Paul.
Can he back up the takes? That's the question.
No,
oh, he knows this. I don't know about basketball. He knows football, though.
Okay.
Like, he knows football, and he still knows the Raiders.
That's great.
Yeah.
So did you get his reasoning?
I love the people here. No, I was like, Lamar, we're gonna deal with this. He says he doesn't protect the ball. He coughs up in the big moment. It's some of the narratives around him.
So do you buy the whole idea that postseason play matters?
No. No, we had an extensive conversation to open yesterday's show about this, and it was essentially something Stephen A. said about what Lamar does moving forward is meaningless. He needs to be Patrick Mahomes, and if he can't be Patrick Mahomes, none of this matters. And I don't agree with that at all, because you have to pick a side here. The bordering on consensus agreement is Patrick Mahomes is projecting to be the greatest quarterback we've ever seen.
Ever.
Yes.
There are some people who would make that proclamation about him right now.
Yes.
And that's perfectly fine based on what we saw. The guy that Lamar can't get past is Patrick Mahomes. So which one is it? Patrick Mahomes is the greatest quarterback we've ever seen, or Lamar's career is worthless if he doesn't get past Patrick Mahomes.
Mm.
Because no one said that. You want to make these comparisons of Patrick Mahomes to Michael Jordan. No one has ever said Charles Barkley's career is worthless.
Mm-hmm.
No one ever says Patrick Ewing's career didn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
No one said Karl Malone's career didn't matter. That dude won MVPs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, okay, you have to choose a side here. If you don't think Lamar is very good, that's fine. But don't base his entire career on whether his team succeeds in the playoffs or not. You didn't do this with Aaron Rodgers, who has won Super Bowl. You didn't do this with Brett Favre, who they changed overtime rules for because he kept turning the ball over at the end of NFC Championship games. You didn't do that to him. Why are you doing that to Lamar Jackson?
Mm-hmm.
And I find the discourse around Lamar absolutely bizarre.
I don't understand it.
I think so many people were wrong when he was drafted.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about this is the people in sports media are so prideful with what they say.
Mm-hmm.
They will do everything they can to back up something they said 6 years ago to prove that it's true. Doesn't matter that Lamar has won two MVPs. He's not the best quarterback. He's the best athlete.
Mm-hmm.
You keep moving the goalposts for Lamar Jackson rather than just acknowledging, well, God damn it, I got that one wrong. Bill Polian got that one wrong. Everyone who said he should switch to this position or switch to that position got that wrong because he has proven on multiple occasions that he is one of the best quarterbacks in the league.
Definitely.
And for me, it is Patrick Mahomes tier one, it is Lamar Jackson tier two, and then everybody else, you can figure it out from there. If you want to put Josh Allen in there, Joe Burrow, you could do whatever you want to. Tier one is Mahomes, tier two is Lamar, and everybody else starts in tier three.
Hmm. Interesting.
I don't know that I agree with your tiers.
I don't care.
I know.
That's where I'm at with Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
You can agree, you can disagree. But you better come up with a really, really good reason as to why he's not at the top of that list.
Are you trying to have dialogue on the radio?
Yeah, well, my personal opinion is you're right. There is one tier above everyone else.
Right.
But then there's a bunch of dudes that are really, really good. And Lamar is one of those guys. And what he did as a passer last year, absolutely remarkable.
Give me another one of those dudes, though, who's really good.
What, like Josh Allen?
He's better than Josh Allen.
I mean, in certain aspects of the game.
I'd go so far as to say he's significantly better than Josh Allen. You want to talk about overrated players. Until this season is done, Josh Allen is one of the most overrated players in the league.
Why?
I got this stat because every year on this day, we do a four in and four out segment. I got that directly from Trey Wingo. No, it's completely clean. Don't do that. Ever since the playoffs have changed, but the 92 wild card,
mm-hmm.
or whenever the latest prior to 2 years ago,
yeah.
wild card went into effect. Four teams that made the playoffs the year before didn't, and four new teams did.
Right.
It's clockwork. Every year it is at minimum four. It's normally more. I got the Bills out.
Okay.
And the reason I have the Bills out is Josh Allen's interception number has gone up four out of the last 5 years.
Mm.
And the 1 year it didn't go up, it just dropped by one.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm of the belief that that trend is going to continue.
Well, I mean, and this year specifically, they just got rid of all those.
They
wide
don't
receivers.
Have his weapons.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think Herbert's going to is overrated.
Someone but has to be a star on his team.
Herbert is like in the same exact boat. Like all of his receivers are gone and he's been a like hit and miss dude as it was anyways.
I think Herbert's going to benefit from his coach. That's kind of the difference right now is I think Sean McDermott is on the hot seat and I think Justin Herbert is going to benefit from Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah, it's possible, but you still got to have someone to throw to.
You're right.
There's only one Patrick Mahomes you can roll out there with a bunch of horrible.
Well,
wide
and they went out and did their best to get a Tyreek Hill type.
Oh yeah,
with that rookie they have, and it's mm-hmm. like, okay, give me a guy who can outrun everybody.
Yeah,
and Worthy. I'm going to have Patrick Mahomes throw him the ball. Yeah. It might not work because that, in a way, is undermining how good Tyreek Hill is.
Sure,
but if it does,
yeah,
you're in really good shape.
Yeah. What do you guys got coming up on D'Lo and KC today?
A lot of this, man. A lot of football predictions. I mentioned four in and four out. I think we need to have an honest conversation about some teams in the league.
Hmm.
And playoff teams turn over so quickly in the NFL. I think sometimes you have these conversations and they come across like hot takes.
Mm-hmm.
When in actuality, there's a lot of evidence to back up. Some of these teams, particularly in the NFC, might not be as good as people think.
Can't wait to hear it. D'Lo and KC coming up next. James and I done for the day. We'll be back tomorrow at 10 a.m. Until then, drink water and be nice to people. Bye.